This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Okay, it's hour number four, the G-Bag Nation. It's time to fix the Cowboys. We got a fixer-upper here after 5 weeks. So we're going to take a look at the top five issues, and then I'm going to ask you guys, after I give you the issue, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely it is to be fixed, okay? You're going to want to text in on this. I know you are. And you're also going to want to tweet in on this, at G-Bag Nation. So jump on the smartphone and get down however you need to get down. Looks like Mike has the Twitter window open. That's very brave of you, sir.
Thanks. It's been a little bit harsh this week, but the Cowboys are on a two-game losing streak, so I understand.
Comes with the territory. Okay, John Machota here wrote about the five Cowboys issues in The Athletic, and I'm about to give you these issues. But let me tell you, salute to Walk-On's Bistro and Bar. The food here is delicious. We were just talking with the manager a couple of breaks back, and their kitchen is pretty much all made from scratch.
Yeah.
And it really, really shows through when it comes to the quality of items on this menu. Absolutely delicious. The bacon-wrapped shrimp, that might have been the best shrimp experience I've ever had in my life.
All right.
So Walk-On's Bistro and Bar, part owned by Drew Brees, by the way. Very popular Cajun type. I believe it's like a Cajun-themed sports bar would be
yes.
a good way to put it, wouldn't
yes.
it? Okay. Lack of takeaways, that's an issue.
Okay.
It's been an issue for like 15 years, and I have about a 3 on that one. I think they'll get more than they've been getting, but they will not be in the top half of the league or anything like that, and I don't know what it's going to take to get it fixed.
You know, I was, as soon as you said that, I had the same number, and I think they'll get a few more, but I have no confidence in these cornerbacks that they will actually get an interception, unless it's like the tip drill where Cheeto got his interception that way, where the ball's kind of tipped up and everybody's like, where is it? Oh, there it is. But they can't find the football in the air to save their lives. So the turnovers will have to come through creating fumbles or sacking the quarterback where the quarterback, you know, fumbles the ball. They ain't intercepting.
This is a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah, 1 to 10. How
level?
Confident are you?
Oh,
like
confident.
10, like, no, this team's going to create a lot of turnovers from now
on. You both
on.
Went 3?
Yeah, I went low.
That's a really good number. I'm going to go 3. Yeah. Because, like, 1. Yep, I believe in the randomness of turnovers. In for a lot of it. That year to year, it won't be the same teams. It never is. And you can go from the top to the bottom to the middle to the top to the bottom. But I also
front.
At the
to
same.
The front. Oh, sorry.
Yes. To the front, to the bottom, to the back, to the side, to the middle, to the front. I also believe in the theory of guys who are good at that. Sean Lee would get interceptions if he was healthy. He would do it. He had that ability.
Put Everson Walls back there, he'd go get 8 of them.
There are people that have that ability. There are defensive backs who can't catch well enough to play receiver, and then there are defensive backs that can't catch. I think the Cowboys, I know they have one that can't catch. They may have multiples that can't catch. So I don't think they'll ever be a high turnover team. I'm with Mike.
Okay.
I think it would have to be a ton of forced fumbles.
We were talking yesterday. They're number 9 in the NFL at quarterback pressure rate. Aren't pressures supposed to spell turnovers?
Yeah, they are. And that's the weird thing is, the Cowboys, like a lot of teams in the league, they play man, they play zone. Call it 50-50 proposition. They play a lot of both. But it's weird because the plays where you're in zone, in theory, the reason you're in zone is so that you can see the quarterback and pick off the ball. Yet their guys still are playing receivers' hands instead of trying to find the ball. And I just – it's got to be the way that they teach it. It has to be. Because you're not going to have 3 corners who are never going to locate the ball just playing the receivers' hands unless that's what they're being taught. So they're being taught that, which is weird because in zone, the idea is we're doing this so you know where your help is so you can see the quarterback in the ball.
Like Jeff Heath when he crashed down this year and was like, you know what I'm going to do? Crash down, get right in the passing lane, and not look for a ball and have it smoke off of my helmet.
Okay, and I bet you Jeff Heath leads his team in interceptions over the last 2 or 3 years. I'll bet money on it. I bet he does. That's your best interception guy.
It's really
bad. Jeff Heath.
Yeah, up to that point, it was Sean Lee. But
right.
He stopped playing in enough games to be the interception leader. We need Leighton Vander Esch to get it going or something. Okay, ball security on offense.
Okay.
That is the second issue. How confident are we the Cowboys are going to get that fixed?
8. Very confident, actually. I don't think Zeke's going to fumble the ball maybe as much. I know that he does.
He's a fumbler.
I think he's
not a terrible fumbler, but more than your average running back.
I think after these two losses and most of it being on we're turning the ball over, that these guys are good enough to not turn it over. I think Dak is still going to be more of a risk taker than we've ever seen in his first 3 years, but understand that I'm probably taking a few too many risks down the field.
Okay, that's crazy because I actually wrote down 8 as well. So we're really? 2 for 2.
Okay.
There's some synchronization going on over here, Jeff. Don't screw it up.
7.3.
All right.
Yeah, I can't go all the way to an 8, but I don't want to drop all the way to a 7. I'll go 7.3. I think Zeke will be who he is, which is a fumble every 2.5 games. I think Dak's numbers will come down because one of his is a Hail Mary pick. One's off Randall Cobb's hands. One's off Amari Cooper's hands. I think that'll even out because some of that's just bad luck.
And he probably won't throw it trying to draw a pass interference call like that again.
Yes, and that's 4 of your 6 picks.
Yeah. That's the growing pain thing to me in the decision making. And you know,
if Tom Brady does that, they throw the flag.
Yeah.
Just want to point that out.
No doubt.
If Tom Brady throws it and then points at it, like, there's a reason I did it, ref. It's because he was mugging him. They'd be like, you're right. Here you go.
I can't go to 9 or 10 on it, though, because the last two games have made me worry a little bit and wonder a little bit. Sometimes you get into a bad mode of it, and you're like, okay, we're not going to turn it over. And then if you turn it over again, then you can start pressing. Then it can start getting into your head and stuff. Okay, number 3 here, the top 5 Cowboys issues. They're presented by John Mishota in The Athletic. And we're giving a 1 to 10 on how confident we are the Cowboys are going to fix these issues by the end of the year. Out of sorts run game. Are they going to get back to running it very well?
Yes. I think not this week. I don't know if you can do that with hampered offensive line. That's the tough part is they invested. And this is why whoever you pay a big amount of money is a terrifying proposition. Because your offensive line, if Lyle Collins and Tyron don't play on average, that's like $25 to $30 million of your salary cap that's unavailable. If DeMarcus Lawrence is hurt, that's $20-something million of your salary cap that's unavailable. So, yeah, if they have everybody, I believe they'll run the ball just fine. But this week, no, because I don't think they'll have everybody.
7. I think.
Mine's a 9.
That they'll get it going?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just not this week.
Okay, yeah. So I think that they'll be a good running team at the end of the year. I think Zeke will be top 3. In yards. I think it's going to be tough right now to catch Dalvin Cook and Christian McCaffrey, but I think that he has a good chance to be 3rd in the NFL in rushing yards.
I do think they're not going to force it, though. I think that what might be different. As much as they talk about Zeke as the straw that stirs the drink, and as much as we talked about in the Saints game, they ran it too much. I think they want to. I think we've seen enough to know they want to pass it in the first half. They want to pass it on early downs to get ahead. And then we'll see Zeke running the ball in the second half.
I heard from somebody who I trust a lot. One of the reasons Zeke held out because we were not expecting it, and then all of a sudden, 2 days before they were leaving, we expected it, is Zeke got a good idea right before training camp where this offense was going. And he's like, if I don't get paid now, we're not going to run the ball as much. I'm not
really
going to be as big of a factor. So I need to let like kind of the Joneses and stuff go, hey, look how important I am to this team. Before I become a little bit more unimportant because we're not going to funnel it through me as much.
That's a really interesting factoid, Mike. All right, number 4 here. How about stopping the run? I really, really want to believe this one. I'm going to say I'm like a 4 out of 10, though. And I think I'll be a little bit better with Antoine Woods back. But giving up 123 yards rushing per game over the last 12, including playoffs, and in 4 of those, only 4 of those have they held the other team under 75 yards rushing. I think what happened is the Cowboys' defense got so good that the other teams are really, really paying attention now. And now that they've started to do it, there's film out. Actually, Chris Richard will have the quote in Cowboys' Twitter. He was talking about Le'Veon Bell and saying, teams know the plays that can work against us. And I don't think the Cowboys can handle the other team's run with the personnel that they have going right now. Maybe they can change to 2-1 techniques.
Maybe
they end up doing that with Covington and Woods, and that would give them a chance. But
yeah.
Right now, I have very little confidence.
What's your
this.
Number?
4.
I was at a 5, that they can maybe fix it a little bit more than you after listening to you talk. But I'm really close with you. Antoine Woods has to be healthy. DeMarcus Lawrence has to play 75% of the snaps, and I think that can change. I do think the linebackers have struggled, and they will be better because there's no way they're this bad. There's no way that those two guys are that bad at football in 2019 after being a good players in 2018.
4.54.
Okay.
Yeah. 4.54. I didn't split the difference. I'm closer to the 5.
The old 454, huh?
Yeah, 454.
Great journalism from Mashota at practice on this one. You have a quote from a coach talking about run defense. If you want to be casual today, it'll be casual in the game, and you will look like bleep. A Cowboys defensive coach said during a tackling drill on Wednesday, Le'Veon Bell will break that tackle and get 20 yards on you. We didn't do a segment on it this week because most of the audio was depressing, but that sounds from the Cowboys sideline that they do on their YouTube and on DallasCowboys.com. There's a great clip of Ben Bloom yelling at both Jalen and Leighton Vander Esch saying, we are going to get this coverage right. And they're like, okay, coach. And he's like, no, say it. We are going to get it right. And they're like, okay, yeah, we are going to get it right. So I think there's stuff that's frustrating the coaches as far as, and maybe this goes to the lack of ability at defensive tackle. Maybe those guys getting manned up on is making the linebackers and defensive backs feel like I got to take a risk to make something happen here because they're blowing this damn thing wide open. And maybe that was the lack of responsibility that's being demonstrated on some of the plays.
I think that's the biggest thing that they have to get into their heads this week that has to stick with them the rest of the year is that you can't do somebody else's job. I think it's true in every sport. If you've got somebody who's getting beat, if the coach has assigned somebody to help you, that's one thing. Like, if offensive lineman's having trouble blocking and you want to give him a tight end or a back to help him, that's fine. But if your job is the strong side B gap, but so-and-so is getting pushed around and you're like, I'm going to guess and I'm going to beat somebody and I'm going to get there, well, congrats. When you guys give up a 15-yard run, that's on you. That's not on the guy that you thought, oh, well, he needed my help. It's on you. So I think they just have to get back to do your job. Everybody has to do your job.
Okay, and then the fifth issue here is the job of the field goal kicker. And I don't know what to think. I'm going to go with a 2.5, though.
Okay.
I think it's 50-50 that they want a new kicker, but they're just not saying it because they don't want to make Mar sketch out,
Okay.
But then even then, I got to cut it in half again because if you bring in another guy, I think it's 50-50 that he's better than Mar. They might have waited too long.
I think it's a 1. I'm going to take Jerry Jones for his word. I understand where Skin is coming from.
Yeah, that we expect that it's a 50-50 proposition.
Yeah, and if that's the case, then it's a 1. It's not going to get fixed. It's going to be horrible, and Jerry doesn't care about it.
I'll go 2.5. I'll go 2.5. No, right. 2. Yep, I'll go 2. Yep, he doesn't deserve that half. No, he's the worst kicker in the league currently.
All right, it is the G-Bag Nation, and this morning, some tragic news. Mm. We're still waiting for more updates. The last update we got was right around 1 o'clock that said he's going to survive and he's got broken teeth. But then it didn't go into any of the other details of injuries. I assume if you're in the ICU, it's not because they're waiting for a dentist to come in and get you some new crowns, right?
No, it's not something to laugh about, but that was funny. But, no, hopefully he's going to be okay eventually. Just watching the video, you can go to at Tommy Sledge, has the video up. It's scary looking, but hopefully it's injuries that Errol can heal from, whether it takes months or years, hopefully he can heal from
well,
that.
Yeah, the first initial good news is, holy crap, he's alive, right? And then you start talking about, okay, well, how alive is it? Is it any permanent injuries? Could he regain his career? And then you start talking into, I believe, the lessons of drinking and driving and the young men always,
Yeah, I think the video is clocked at 2:47 a.m. is when it happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And an absolutely insane video that surfaced right before we went off on the air, a security video. And you can see the headlights coming, and then it starts rolling, and you're like, the thing just rolls past you, and you can see parts of the car flying off and what might be a guy flying out.
Yeah, they said he was thrown from the car.
Yeah, ejected and rolled about 5 times. But so far, it's, I would say, overall good news and unbelievably amazing and miraculous news compared to how bad the deal could have been. When we woke up this morning and you start looking on Twitter, and the only thing known at that point was a major figure had been involved in an accident, and you're like, okay, actor, you know, wealthy oil tycoon, athlete, obviously. You're thinking Cowboys, and all the sports journalists were checking with their teams. Did one of your players get involved in an accident with a Ferrari? And all that was coming back, no. But then, boom, about 45 minutes later, we found out it was, you know, Errol Spence Jr., a guy who just won a huge fight 2 weeks ago and was, you know, talking in line to fight Manny Pacquiao or Danny Garcia, Terrence Crawford, Canelo Alvarez, one of the biggest personalities in all of sports, really, and one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in boxing, the official champion of DFW, the official boxer of the Cowboys and the G-Bag Nation, and a guy that represents Dallas wherever he goes super, super well. So thoughts and prayers to Errol Spence. Okay, we are live here, Walk-On's Bistro and Bar. If you're just getting out of work or you're looking for somewhere to go to have an awesome time, watch the game tonight, which is starting in about 50 minutes, and have some amazing food. It's a from-scratch kitchen, and you're talking about some of the best stuff you can find. Okay, that more is coming up next here as we'll get into some baseball. We're talking baseball with Mike Bassett. We'll call this segment Baseball Tonight, as we take a look at this matchup and what happens to the legacy of one of the greatest baseball players in North Texas history. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. We're live, Walk-On's Bistro and Bar here in Irving. And what do we have? We're, I believe, under 10 flags to go here on this Flagtober Tour stop.
Sorry,
if you're
friends.
A Tolo, they're right over here at Bistro's Bar, just off of 635. We got baseball talk here for you, Mike.
Okay.
And there is a postseason controversy I can't wait to ask you about here in just a couple of minutes.
Oh, no.
But before we get there, I do feel horrible for Clayton Kershaw. Some of his quotes from last night. Segment's brought to you by Chamberlain Steak and Chop House, by Classic Chevrolet, and by Dallas Truck World. And, yeah, we're talking here with former Rangers left-hander Mike Bassick, one of the great DFW pitchers. Let's just call it what it is. But
oh, thanks.
Yeah, you are.
Oh,
yeah,
maybe. I thought you were talking about Kershaw.
Yeah, maybe not relative to other big leaguers. But, yeah, you're one of the best pitchers
probably
to ever do it.
25 of all time. No, where do you think you rank DFW pitchers of all time? Like, how many made the big leagues and were successful?
I don't know.
It'd be a huge number.
Good question. I'll say top 50. How about that?
Okay. That's not bad.
Somebody get that figured out for us. We'd like to know Mike's ranking. There are a lot of young pitchers coming up in this area.
There are, yeah.
So many of them taught by your dad. So, but some of
his
quotes.
He actually gave a lesson to Kershaw when he was in ninth grade.
That's awesome. It'll rip your heart right out. He says, when you don't win the last game of the season and you're to blame for it, it's not fun. The main reason it hurts is the group of guys in this clubhouse. It's a terrible feeling. It might linger for a while. I might not get over it. I don't know.
Wow.
Spring training's going to come, and I'll have to be ready to pitch and do my job the best I can. If you missed it, Bueller threw, what, 6 2/3?
Yes.
Kershaw comes in, gets the last out of the seventh, and then in the eighth, two solo home runs to tie the game. They end up losing in the 10th inning.
It was a tough one, and Kershaw is being a very responsible person there because he did tie the game up, and then Joe Kelly gave up all the runs in the 10th inning. And the Dodgers had a chance to score. And it's funny, we're here at Walk-On's here in Irving, and the TVs are on and just watching Kershaw's reaction. It's so tough in a do-or-die game when you're winning and you give up the lead. Not that they started losing the game, but you give up the lead. Like, your dugout feels like it's a funeral, and there's two more innings to go. And the other dugout that's been down all game trying somehow to tie or take the lead has just tied the game.
Yeah.
So now it's an even game with pretty much two innings to go.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, we're going to do it. Dancing, throwing stuff, cheering. And the other dugout's like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. You know, it's like, it's just the mental part of life and sports and everything on, like, we're tied.
It's like,
but the Dodgers had lost in that moment. When Kershaw gave up the two home runs, they lost.
You're right, man. It's crazy how that psychology happens, because Cowboys are down 14 points. to the Packers, and I'm like, sweet, it's only a two-score game. We can do this a little bit. The sideline's getting active, and maybe the Packers are getting a little bit nervous until, you know, Michael Gallup gets mugged and it goes back to 17 or whatever. But, I think that's interesting. You always, I think, should be trying to tell yourself, man, imagine how much worse it could be. It goes to appreciating how good it is right now, doesn't it?
Yes.
What happens to Kershaw's legacy? I mean, being a non-winner in the playoffs in baseball is so flippin' cruel. It's, you know, because people talk about like you don't have heart, but it's most likely just a small sample size like was plaguing David Price for all those years. You just you get unlucky. Sometimes you could lose 10 coin flips in a row, and
it's tough. And man, I agree with you. He's going to end up being a top five left-handed pitcher probably in the history of baseball. But when he goes into the Hall of Fame, he'll be first ballot. People will look and go, oh, man, he was awesome. Except, man, in the playoffs, he always stunk. And he really didn't always stink. He is 9-11. He does have 9 wins, and he has a 4.4 ERA. It's not a great ERA, especially for how good he is. But his right now, as his career is somewhat coming to a close, he probably has 3 or 4 years left, and it's already going downhill. He's not the same guy he used to be. He's not bad. He's just good. He's just not awesome Cy Young candidate anymore. He's just good borderline all-star pitcher at this point. He's going to be remembered for the kind of collapses in the playoffs, and the Dodgers have been in the playoffs a lot in his career.
All right. So speaking of that game and what happened in the ninth that didn't end the game, Mike, I have a controversy here
for you.
Okay,
in the ninth inning.
Story by R.J. Anderson. On Wednesday night, the Dodgers fell to the Nationals. The Dodgers were eliminated. There was a moment in the bottom of the ninth, however, where it appeared Will Smith had saved the day for L.A. with a walk-off home run. Smith thought so, and the fans in attendance thought so, and so did various other Dodgers in the dugout. Based on the bat flip, tweeted Stephanie Epstein, a reporter.
Oh, yeah, that's what I saw.
Will Smith launched on a flyout. He's among the people who feel the ball has been unjuiced for the playoffs.
There's scientific evidence to support it. I saw charts this morning.
Thanks to Rob Arthur's work at Baseball Perspective, we know it isn't just a feel thing. On Thursday, he published an article suggesting the league has introduced a different ball during the postseason, and it's having a massive impact on the games.
So it could be happening. Here's the deal where all the ball controversy has come in. It's when MLB took over the ball, and it does still say Rawlings on it, but they were able to buy the company and now make the ball however they want. So they can do whatever they want, and they made it kind of a deal where we don't have to tell the players, we don't have to tell anybody that we can change the ball at any point. And obviously, if they wanted to change the ball in the playoffs, when they stamp them, it's stamped with a playoff logo. So they knew, like, hey, when we're making playoff balls, we can change the ball back to pre-2015 if we want. When the ball...
Wow.
So it could be happening. I'm not going to say it's not happening. Obviously, when I watched Juan Soto's ball at nighttime, where Juan Soto hit that ball in L.A., that is a bomb. That is upper deck.
But earlier this year, that would have been 600 feet, and now it was just like 450.
Yeah, it might have been. But, you know, and that's the thing is, it is just the playoffs, as in what I'm saying here, is we've had a few games compared to when you play a 162-game season and you have 30 teams doing it on kind of the evidence. But, hey, it could be happening. Now, that being said, the pitchers are throwing just as hard or even a little bit harder right now, and there's also when you release the ball, if it has that less drag, then it goes faster, and guys have been throwing the ball a little bit faster. If they've changed the ball, I would also expect to see a mile or two difference in velocity in their fastball, that the fastball isn't going as fast. But, you know, sometimes you'll get that not maybe out of the hand where the radar gun gets it. Maybe you'd get it closer to home plate if you had one of those guns that seeing the ball travel through the air and it has more drag on it. From the pitcher standpoint, that would be something else to see. Are the balls, if tonight we see Gerrit Cole release a ball and it says 99, that's 99 out of his hand. That's not 99 when it hits the catcher's mitt. If now he's throwing 99 in the season and it had a drag of it's 95 in the zone and now we're seeing a drag of it's 93 in the zone, then I'd say, man, we 100% know it because the ball's even slower getting into the zone.
Well, more questions definitely need to be asked and answered, and some scientists are going to take a look at this. But this guy, at a baseball perspective, took a look at the launch angle and the exit velocity, yeah. Said there's been 43 home runs. There should have been an additional 24 home runs.
Holy cow.
And apparently the average temperature at the games in the playoffs has been higher, not lower and colder, as can happen in October baseball. It hasn't cooled down yet.
The best way to do this, I assume, is you get a ball from the regular season, and the scientists need to get one of these foul balls. Because you can't ask Major League Baseball to give you one of the balls. They're going to give, you know, you can't trust them, right? They don't want to give you a 2019 ball and a 2019 playoff ball. You split it open and find that there's a difference in the weight of it or the distribution of where the whatever, cork, seam, whatever it is that makes it go a little bit further or not further. But I don't know. Is that them going, we got to overcorrect? Even Rob Manfred said this in September, that we have to look at the baseball because it is kind of getting out of hand, the home run rate.
Yeah, it would just be weird to do it for the playoffs.
I'm with you. Yeah. That you say, okay, look, we're going to have to do this the rest of 2019 because everybody's used to this baseball, but starting next year, we're going to go back to pre-2015 baseball.
So MLB released a statement today, and they're saying, well, you know, hey, there's nothing different about the way they're manufactured, but they did say different balls come in different batches, and sometimes from batch to batch.
Oh, yes, of course. They're not consistent, right? We don't make the same professional baseball over and over again. They're random.
That might explain, I think, 5 or 10% difference, but not 50% difference in the amount of home runs that are hit on launch angles and exit velocity.
Any percentage is dumb. Like, hey, listen, we're producing these baseballs for the highest level of baseball played. And sure, some of them travel 20 feet further, but yeah, that's just the way baseball go.
So the other talking point, of course, is the Game 5 that is coming up in just about a half hour from now. Gerrit Cole against pretty much the Rays bullpen. Yeah. Glasnow is going to start, right?
Yeah, he'll go anywhere from 2 to 4 innings, I think. I think you could see Blake Snell pitch anywhere from an inning to 3 innings. He's on regular rest, and then you start going to your bullpen guys. And the Astros, I'll keep saying this, if you're an Astros fan, they had a major issue with 95-plus this year. They are the worst team that is in the playoffs at hitting hard fastballs. And the Tampa Bay Rays have some hard throwers. Tonight's starting pitcher, average fastball, 96.9 miles an hour. And then when you go to Blake Snell, it is just above 95. It's like 95.7. I looked at it earlier, but I know that it was right on that borderline of where they don't hit well. Now, that being said, Tampa is a very bad hitting team too overall. So I expect this to be, if you can score 3 in this game, you should win this game.
All right. If the Astros lose, that would be a 106 win team and a 107 win team on back-to-back nights, eliminated in the first round. What would that mean to you?
It would mean going forward in the playoffs, I'm not as interested because I don't care about Tampa. They don't have any stars. They kind of do it by committee with the pitching staff. It's unbelievable what they're doing at $65 million for their team. But at the same time, I want to see Houston versus New York. I mean, those are two unbelievably great teams. I want to see Verlander. I want to see Gerrit Cole. I want to see Zach Greinke face the New York Yankees lineup. And that, if it becomes Tampa, New York, it's kind of like, okay, I'll have it on, but I'm just not going to be as
MLB
engaged.
Does not want Tampa to win this game.
So you don't pull for the Nationals?
I am pulling for the Nationals. I was happy when they scored the runs and then scored the grand slam in the 10th inning. That's great for the Washington Nationals. For baseball, it's not awesome. Obviously, Cardinals, Dodgers, two historic franchises, maybe the two most historic franchises in the National League facing off would have been better for overall ratings. But Nationals, Cardinals, as long as they play the Yankees, it's a huge World Series. If they play Houston, Houston's, I think, still the best team in baseball. But Houston doesn't have the national attention that the Yankees do.
We're live, Walk-Ons Bistro and Bar, and we do have a few flags left, and I do mean a few. It looks like I would say 5, okay? A handful. Here we go. So when we return, it's going to be time for Jeff to present some content. And what exactly did you have in mind?
Around the wildlife. But first, of course, bad news for a couple young, promising NFL QBs in the nation.
Mesquite Mitsubishi has the brand new Outlander Sport SUV starting at $16,900. Visit mymitsu.com.
Okay, welcome back, G-Bag Nation. We're live in Irving at Walk-On's Bistro and Bar. Come on by and have some dinner and something delicious and listen to Jeff spin tales of glory in his time.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm hoping to get to Around the Wildlife and Adventures with Sesame Street. But first, this is a sports station, so I want to share with you some really good journalism that is on SI.com, which may be rare on that website, especially rare from this particular author. I didn't notice who wrote it. It's Albert Breer. But anyway, it is good content, and it's something that Dwayne Haskins and Josh Rosen, I hope they don't read, but it's a really good look at the cautionary tales of playing quarterback in the NFL if you're not Peyton Manning. Or, like, there's a few guys, right, who almost no matter where they went, you think they would have overcome it and eventually been successful, or maybe not. But
there's some guys, and, yeah, I'd put Peyton Manning in that group.
But for anybody not named that, it's a great look through the eyes of Brady Quinn, Joey Harrington, and Tim Couch.
Ooh, there's three losers for you.
Right. So he talked to those three losers about a couple of the current young quarterbacks in the NFL, and they start with Brady Quinn, who a lot of people thought that the Dolphins were going to take him number 9 overall in the 07 draft. Instead, they took Ted Ginn Jr. So then they get down to pick number 22 where the Cowboys are on the clock, and Baltimore calls Brady Quinn, and he talks to him for about 10 minutes. They're like, we're going to come get you. And that's a team with a good defense, good running game, and he's like, heck yeah, this is going to be awesome. And before he hangs up, Cleveland called and traded up. And came and got Brady Quinn.
Beginning of the end.
And so he went to the Cleveland Browns. And he also admits that he doesn't think he was mentally ready to start, but they didn't care. They were like, yeah, go get him, Slugger. So you're surrounded by nothing. He's not ready. And after a year or two of it, it's like, what now?
Well,
like, I'm broken.
College coach called him the next Tom Brady. So
yeah, that probably helped him a lot, yeah.
There was a lot of hype on that guy.
Oh, yeah. There was a ton. And he goes to a situation that was terrible, and he never bounced back from it. So Joey Harrington, his what-if was in Kansas City. Dick Vermeil was there. The Chiefs were looking hard at him in the 2002 draft. His dad had played for Vermeil's assistants, but he obviously didn't end up there, and it didn't work out the way he wanted. Tim Couch wonders what would have happened if Cleveland passed on him in 99. And he'd gone to one of the other four teams that took quarterbacks in the top 12 that year, Philly, Cincy, Chicago, Minnesota. He says, you look at what could have been if I was with Andy Reid in Philly or in Minnesota with Randy Moss and Chris Carter and Robert Smith, all those guys. I think my career would have been different if I'd ended up a different place. I think it's a natural thing to look back at your career when it's said and done and wonder if you went to this place or that place. And so they just talk to all these different guys. And like Joey Harrington, he says, when I got to Atlanta in 2007, he said, honestly, I was still trying to fix what happened to me in Detroit. Like, it kind of ruined me as a player, and I had to try to unlearn, like, that's not the way it is. I am a good player, and try to put it back together. And he said his biggest problem after that start on a team that couldn't protect him, didn't have weapons, it was just like there was nothing there. He said doubt,
yeah,
lack of confidence.
That's so huge, yeah. I mean, whatever you really believe about yourself has a great chance of coming true. If you really believe you're great and you have unwavering confidence, I think you could overcome a Detroit situation. But I think that's less than 5% of guys that are going to arrive at any spot in the NFL.
Yeah.
That type of natural-born confidence is just incredibly rare that you could withstand 3 years of getting your butt kicked and still believe you're the guy.
Okay, so I did have Quinn and Tim Couch backwards. Tim Couch is the one that he's like, listen, in college, I didn't make our line adjustments. Like, I didn't do these things. And so I wasn't going to start my first year in the league because these are things I had to learn. But the team was bad in week one, and they put me in. Like, week two, go get him, Tiger. Brilliant. And he's like, I didn't know the adjustments. He's like, and we didn't block well. So I got killed.
I was in Cleveland at the time playing for the Indians, and part of it was they had just got their team back, and everybody wanted the first pick to play. And so I don't know this, but they might have just felt like, look, we got the new stadium. We got the fans to support it. They want Tim Couch. Give the fans Tim Couch.
Right, and so they did. And the way he says it is, he says, I was physically ready, but mentally I don't think I was. Handling myself at the line of scrimmage, the offense at the line of scrimmage, getting in and out of plays, handling protections. In college, I didn't do that. So I got hit a lot. And a lot of that was on me, not knowing what was going on, getting myself picked off, not getting rid of the ball quickly, and the line was struggling. And he says after that pounding adds up, he said, I became gun shy. The more you get hit in the league, it speeds the clock up in your head. You feel like you have to get rid of the ball quicker than you actually have to. Makes you want to get out of the pocket quicker instead of sitting there to take more hits. And then Brady Quinn's story, he says, I actually felt great about the offense I came into. Felt great about what we were doing with Rob Chudzinski, and because he had played for Charlie Weiss at Notre Dame, and he was like, yeah, I was ready. But Derek Anderson was a starter. He made the Pro Bowl. And the next year, when he finally gets into the lineup, Chudzinski's about to be fired. Eric Mangini's coming in, and like the whole thing was totally falling apart. And they were like, all right, go save us. And it was like, well, wait, but now my surroundings are terrible. And so the whole point of this is what Joey Harrington says here. He says, look at a guy like Brady who's had Belichick since the Roman Empire. And if the difference between success and failure in the NFL is a quarterback, it's about being comfortable, confident, making timely, smart decisions. If you have an ability to spend a decade in the same system, you know it backward and forward. And you're trying to compare that to guys like Marcus Mariota or Rosen and the number of head coaches and systems they're going through. It's impossible to make the same quick decisions when you're still trying to figure out what the plays are and who's calling them. So for guys like Josh Rosen, who you failed on the worst team in football last year. And so now your value went down because they found a new guy they like. So now you're referred to as a second-round pick because that's what you were traded for. Now the expectations are dropped because you failed on a terrible team.
Yeah.
Now you're on a terrible team and you're going to fail. What are the lasting effects of 2 years of being on a terrible team and failing? And can you ever become good after that?
If I was going to answer it, I would say not if you're one of those guys. I think for a lot of the really good guys, they would get somewhere else and make something of it. Because those guys do get a second chance to go somewhere else
right.
if you're a first-round pick.
Right.
And I think if you do have the traits and the ability. But those guys, they need a perfect situation just to have like a 6 or 8 year career where the fan base is disappointed in them.
You know,
Joey Harrington back in college, I covered him there. He was a one-read quarterback and they had 6 plays. You know, it was,
right.
it was bad.
Right. Well, so they were talking about all those different guys. And let me see if I can find the one quote. Here we go. It's Joey Harrington. And maybe he's wrong about this, because if he was a one-read guy, he's lying about himself. But he says, take a round number, say 50 guys in the NFL, with the exception of Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning when he was playing. There's 50 guys who can make every single throw, every single read, do everything necessary to be an NFL quarterback, and circumstances determine the trajectory of their career. The difference between, say, Ben Roethlisberger and Brady Quinn is Ben came into a situation where he's able to rile in the running game, had defense. If you go back and look at his first year stats, there was only one game, maybe two, where he threw more than 20 passes. That lets you build confidence.
Okay.
They let him establish a foundation.
There's something to it, but old Joey's in a little bit of denial, too.
And maybe,
everybody's the same athletically.
Right, it's just and maybe, maybe all three of them were trash. But if you're Dwayne Haskins or if you're Josh Rosen, please don't read this article because you're the two players they're talking about that can you overcome the circumstances that you're put in where it's like, hey, go be awesome. Like, no, we can't help you with it, but go be awesome. And by the way, you'll have a new OC next year and a new head coach, probably again the next year, maybe one at midseason, and just go be awesome. What's wrong with that? It's easy, guys. Go tear it up.
Yeah.
Just a quick hitter here. Richard Sherman said Baker Mayfield definitely deserves an apology. My bad, Richard Sherman there.
Yeah, we covered that yesterday.
Oh, okay.
While
just
you
making
were
sure
golfing.
You got it. Just making sure you got it. I did not golf. I went to Honda Cars McKinney
and
bought a car.
His girlfriend a car.
And then I didn't buy a car. I just made a down payment to pay for furniture. Now, also, Texans Can Academy is where she's donating her old car. So it's a double 105.3 The Fan
nice
situation.
Cool. Writing off the car, not the kid.
That's because it was worth $8. Sesame Street has a new character named Carly, whose mother has an opioid addiction.
I saw that.
Oh,
yeah.
Hi, Carly.
No, just Carly. Yeah, Sesame Street, not afraid. Yeah, they're throwing Carly in there because apparently 5.7 million children under the age of 11 live in a home with a parent with substance abuse issues, and Sesame Street's not scared, so they threw in a nice little Muppet there with an opioid-addicted mom.
Is that still on PBS? I mean, I had three. I still have three kids, but I had three kids that watched.
You used to have three?
Cartoons and stuff. They don't really watch that programming anymore. We never turned on Sesame Street.
I know.
I don't know. Is it on PBS? Where do you find it?
My mom is very disappointed that the kids don't watch Sesame Street anymore because I was a five-day-a-week kid. Okay, thank you so much to Walk-On's Bistro and Bar. We have one more hour to go. Maybe we can pick up this conversation a little bit later on here in the G-Bag Nation.
Oh, the Around the Wildlife?
Yeah, Around the Wildlife.
Yeah, I got that for you.
That's needed. We'll take a look at what's on 105throughthefan.com and what Dak can, or what Jason Garrett can take from Dak's leadership playbook. That's coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.